Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome to Sports Day. Nice to have your company. Carl Langdon, Mark Reddings with you. 133-882 is our number. The Birmingham 2022 team selections have been announced. 32 of our athletes have been announced, and Nina Kennedy will join us after 7 o'clock tonight, as will Lee Kitchen, who captained our state and won a Simpson medal yesterday, and what was a fantastic game of footy as the curtain raiser to the West Coast Melbourne game. And it was a very tight contest, and if you went along to that, 133-882, just some of the news that's bubbling around at the moment. There's plenty more.
Yes, good evening, Carl, and to our listeners. Pretty grim weekend of footy for WA, I have to be honest with you, with both the West Coast Eagles and the Fremantle Dockers going down. I received a phone call from a mum on Sunday at the footy, Carl, and it was before the Eagles played, and she said, look, I'll still follow the Eagles, as she does, but I've lost my excitement, my passion this year, just nothing to look forward to. And I think a lot of Eagles supporters feel the same way after what's transpired 3 hours later at Optus Stadium, when Melbourne, as expected, took care of the Eagles. The margin 74 points. And that margin, by the way, just adds to a list of little records being set by the West Coast Eagles for all the wrong reasons, unfortunately, at the moment. You go back to some of the easy beats of the competition over the past 35 years or thereabouts, or 30 years. Fitzroy, in 1995, go back to the Giants when they were really on struggle street in 2012. The Gold Coast Suns in 2016, they were getting belted. Well, they all suffered defeats of 60 points plus. Now, five straight losses of 60 points plus. And that's exactly the same territory that the West Coast Eagles are in at the moment. 74 points. And, Carl, it's going to be a painful grind out of this demise.
Yeah, look, it's really intriguing too, because whilst there is some suggestions that West Coast are young, well, when I actually had a look through the Melbourne side as I was broadcasting after the game yesterday, well, they've actually got a lot of their younger players that are generally a lot younger. Like Jackson is 20, Spargo 21, Bowie's 19, Jordan's 21, Rivers is 20, Sparrow's 21, Petty's 22, Pickett's 20, and Chandler, who's been offered 2 weeks for his tackle on Luke Foley after that incident. I'd be interested in your thoughts on that in a moment, Skeet, too. He's only 22. Now, West Coast yesterday, with players that fit into that age bracket, have Winder at 19, Foley, 22, Bailey Williams, 22, Callum Jamieson, 21, and Harry Edwards, 21. So, you know, you just compare that group of players to the group of players that I've just read out from a West Coast Eagles perspective. And then if you even go to the 23 and 24-year-olds, you've got Petrescu Seaton, you've got Jake Waterman, you've got Alex Witherden, you've then got Jermaine Jones, you've got Josh Rotham, Connor West, Greg Clark, Hugh Dixon and Patrick Naish, who played in the game yesterday. And if you extend that out to, say, Melbourne, Clayton Oliver's 24, Bailey Fritz is 25. For the most part, the core of those young players that played yesterday for Melbourne are younger than a lot of the players that played for West Coast.
Yeah, and look, at concern that you have, and I share your view for what it's worth with regards to some of the players we saw at Optus Stadium yesterday, is that they're not going to be able to cut the mustard long-term in the AFL. Now, that's no one's fault, certainly not their fault. They've been selected and they've had a crack and they've done their best, as Adam Simpson has said. There was no lack of effort yesterday, but you're falling short by 74 points, so there's a fair bit going wrong with the side, and a fair deal to do with that is a lack of availability of your senior players. But the problem with those senior players, Carl, as we've discussed as well at length on 6PR, is that their bodies are not what they used to be, and they may never get back to being operational at the 100% for long periods of time. And we talk of Luke Shuey, talk of Nick Natanui, we talk of Elliot Yeo, guys that are quality A-listers in terms of when they're at their peak. But are we going to see that again from them? It's just a big question mark that unfortunately no one can answer at this point.
Well, I think the thing to acknowledge, though, at Melbourne is that their key pillars, their spine, are all 30-plus. May, Lever, Gawn, Brown. If you consider there's a... And Tommy McDonald. So there's... I missed him out as well. So those players, basically your tallest and and key position players, you know, those two in defence have just, you know, playing really good footy right now, May and Lever, who have been recruited to the Melbourne Football Club. They came from Adelaide and Gold Coast, respectively, Lever and May. Maxi Gawn, of course, has played his career, but he's now into his 30s, only playing game 168 on the weekend. Tommy McDonald, he played his 200th last week, so he's just clicked over the 200 club mark. And big bad Benny Brown, who came from North Melbourne, has played game 149, so he's set for a 150-game milestone on the weekend as well. And again, three of those four players have come from other clubs. So it just shows you that there is the ability to be able to recruit. There is the ability, particularly when it comes to your key big man department. And that's why, you know, when you've got a Luke Jackson who hasn't signed at Melbourne, and you've got a bloke by, the big fella that plays at the Western Bulldogs as well, Timmy English, who's yet to re-sign a contract there. I know that they're West Australians in this case, but you've got to try and have a crack at some of these blokes, because history has shown us that they are gettable.
True, but also you don't want to give up priority picks in terms of draft picks that are going to set you up long-term as well. So it's a balancing act. We know the Tim Kelly story, which at the time after they won a flag was always going to be sort of a hit or miss, and at this stage it's a miss because they haven't won a flag since. The other club that should be brought into focus here, Carl, is the Fremantle Dockers. We expected the Eagles to lose, but the Dockers supporters... Now, was this just an aberration, or was this just a club that's been up for 6 weeks, had win after win after win, and went over to Queensland, slippery conditions, didn't suit them, and the Suns played very good football. So the Fremantle Dockers, I'm prepared to, of course, give them a leave pass on this occasion, given their football has been very good. But hopefully it's not just a sign that once they play against better sides this season, they're going to hit some roadblocks in the form of Brisbane and Melbourne. That will really test whether they are a top four team. At the weekend, they were poor after two early goals, didn't fire a shot. And for mine, I was really disappointed with the output, although not totally unexpected, given we know what the Gold Coast are like, particularly up on Metricon Stadium.
Yeah, and I think if you looked at what they did the week before, 2 to Sydney, I mean, I didn't expect that, but to do it at the SCG was a bit of a shock, and it wasn't like Sydney have had, say, the COVID effects. Now, look, Freo just looked flat in a number of areas. It was a really interesting scenario when you look at their supply, only 36 inside 50s to Gold Coast to 65 to Freo, yet they only get the 13 shots. Like, that's just unbelievable. I mean, 65, if you're getting 65 inside 50s...
You win most matches.
To your opposition's 36, you're surely winning. I just couldn't believe it when I looked at that stat, and I'm going, wow. They had 19 tackles inside 50 to 12. You know, it was only 5 marks to 3, and the conditions certainly played its part there. But, I reckon if you had read that stat out to me and asked me who won that game of footy, I would have said Fremantle by 5 goals, but it was the other way around. Let's go to the phones, 133-882. What's hot for you? Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company's taste of Dardanup Valley Spring Lamb. What we do know is that Liam Ryan has been offered a week for rough conduct. Kate Chandler has been offered 2 weeks for that dangerous tackle. If you've got a comment on either of those two incidents, we'd love to hear from you. But Craig in Kinross joins us first. G'day, mate.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
First of all, Andrew Simmons, legend, loved watching him play. One thing I would like to say is... if anyone wants to have a look back at the Monkey Gate, have a look at Harvey Jones Singh's comments in the last day or so, and what he actually did when Simmons was over in the IPL. We've got to cover him a bit of slack as well. Because he did the wrong thing. He knows he did the wrong thing, and
Simmons
being,
being
the sensational bloke he was. Have a look at the photos that both of them have uploaded over Instagram and everything like that. Simmons, awesome bloke.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Craig. And going back to the Andrew Symons, the Monkey Gate, I saw it was a repeat, but it was in tribute to Andrew Symons. He discussed with Crash Craddock about that moment in time, and he didn't feel, this is Symons, that he received enough support from Cricket Australia during that period. And obviously, the Indians were in Australia. The SCG Test match, in the middle of this, the incident blew up, and unfortunately, because of, well, we know politics came into it, from Andrew Symons' point of view at least, and money, given if the Indians went home, the financial loss in terms of broadcast, etc., would have been enormous. So that really hurt his belief in the game and the way it was conducted at times in Australia. But on a broader sense, yes, it's been just a terrible few months for Australian cricket. Do it, Carl. You open your phone up in the morning, and when I first start seeing things like Andrew Symons' highlights, I'm thinking, okay, what's happening here? And then you obviously come to the realisation that, unfortunately, at the age of 46, he's passed away. So a very sad loss. And there was a little tribute from North Queensland today. Get your rods out for Roy. And, of course, a mad fisherman, a real larrikin, a really good cricketer, and very popular amongst his peers.
Yeah, certainly a man taken far too soon, and regularly had a chat to him about fishing because it was something that he and I love to do, and I had a yak to him on my my boat dive fishing show some years ago. But that that Monkey Gate you were talking to was back in 2007. Doesn't seem like that long ago, but wow, how fast does 15 years go? Let's go to another caller in Dianella, and it looks like that
Phil.
It is Phil. Hello, Phil.
Good evening, boys. I thought I'd just brighten up the show because the Eagles lost, the Dockers lost, and Glory, well, they're down and out. So I thought I'd just give a little shout for my grandson. He's 17 years of age, and the Australian club title boxing was held in Adelaide over the weekend, right? Mm-hmm. Under 17, he picked up the title. If you look on Facebook, you'll see him.
What's his name?
Boy, his name is Harry Collier, and I keep saying to him, dance like a butterfly and sing like a bee. And that's what he did.
Phil, he probably doesn't even know who you're talking about.
Sorry?
Does he know who you're talking about? Muhammad Ali's a bit past his age bracket, but...
I keep saying to him, Muhammad Ali, sting like a butterfly. Anyway, the first chap that he was supposed to fight, I think he, this bloke must have saw Harry and he thought, bugger this, I'm not going in. So he cancelled out. So yesterday we had to wait nearly just over three quarters for him to have a fight. And I tell you what, he danced like a butterfly, all right, and he stung like a bee, and he's won the championship.
Great stuff, Phil. So, great to hear that your grandson's done yourself, and of course, WA proud. Harry Collier will keep our eyes out for him.
I've just found him. I've just found him on Facebook. Peterson's Gym. Is he still at Peterson's Gym there in Stirling?
No, in Belmont.
Oh, he's in Belmont, okay. Oh, maybe this is where they were going to be fighting at the Stirling Adriatic Centre. But this was a couple of years ago that I'm looking at, and I've got him here with a picture. He's got his head protection helmet on, and he's standing there with his gloves. Skeeter's a 16-year-old, so probably bigger and stronger now. Good on you, Phil. Thanks for calling through. Let's stay in Dianella and have a chat to Daniel. G'day, Dan.
Evening, guys. A couple of days ago, I guess, there was an article about, you know, the under-23s, whether it was by Bluey or Pudge. Was it actually by you, Carl?
The
under-23s? Yeah, under-23s that have produced premierships, a proportion of those.
In the AFL you're talking, Daniel, so your line's a little bit scratchy, so I'm just trying to get...
Yeah, it's ordinary.
You talking the AFL, Daniel? Have we lost him?
No, he's gone.
Yeah, it was a very scratchy line.
I'm pretty sure he was talking about an article that was written by somebody with premiership players under 23. Is that what he was calling
about?
So. I'm pretty sure. But, I mean, look, I just know that, say, reflecting back to 1992, I mean, we had, I think, three 19-year-olds in that particular team going back then, McIntosh, Jakovich, and Mitchell White. I reckon they were all 19. And the core of our team were not, I think, Woosher, and we're all about the same age, myself, Summer, Woosher, Chris Waterman. We would have all been around 23. Kempe and Brett Hetty were a couple of years younger. So, yeah, it was a really young team. And then, of course, you had Paul Harding, who was a bit older. You had Michael Brennan, who was a little bit older. Dwayne Lamb, who was that little bit older. Probably Peter Wilson and Chris Mainwaring, I reckon, would have been probably the oldest blokes in that team. Then, yeah, so I reckon around sort of the core of your team around 23, 24 is normally about where it sits. And if you haven't sort of made it by then, Skeet, you're generally struggling.
Yeah, well, just Daniel's back on the line from Dinella. Hopefully the line is a bit better. But, Dan, you want to continue on that point to expand and maybe just clarify what you were saying?
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, guys, for re-accepting my call. So I jokingly said at work today, look, when you turn 25, you're going to be considered an old man or a veteran in the AFL. And I was at yesterday's game and looking at it, you can watch on the TV, maybe in a couple of years, you are in your late 20s, an old man. I just wondered, you know, your take on that, the pace of the game.
Skeet, you want to have a crack?
Well, I'm not sure that, what are you saying, the age of 23, 24, 25, you're past your prime, I think.
Over 25, I think he said.
Over 20. No, I'm not sure about that. I still see plenty of players like Tom Hawkins going okay. I see, you know, when they're up and running, some of the players over that 25 age bracket playing some pretty good footy. So, but you're right, it's a quicker game. Is it as demanding as it once was physically? I'd say probably in terms of endurance-wise, yes, the numbers would say that they're doing more Ks, Carl. I know there's more interchange and rotations, etc. But I still think there's a definite window for players in that 25 to 30 bracket in any team. And a premiership team, as you just mentioned, like Melbourne, who've got that core group down the spine of McDonald, of Lever, of May, who give you that experience, Maxi Gawn as well, to, you know, balance up with those 20, 23-year-olds.
All right, we need to get to a break. We are getting badly behind time. It's already 25 past 6, 133-882. What's hot for you? Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
And thanks to Hungry Jack's, we are just going to do an AFL update. The burgers are better at Hungry Jack's. WA legend in Bill Dempsey is going to be honoured during the Sir Doug Nicholls round. Here's the honoree. We just heard some of his comments in that news with John Nicholls a short time ago. So he's a legend of a bloke, Billy, and it is a fantastic accolade. We do know that Corey Durden of Carlton is the AFL Rising Star for round 9. And what we do know also is that late this afternoon that Cade Chandler has been offered 2 weeks for his dangerous tackle on Luke Foley of West Coast, and that Liam Ryan has been offered 1 week for rough conduct on his bump to Jake Bowie. I don't know, Skeet. Looks like Bowie to me. Anyway, let's go back to those phones as we head out to Cardinia and have a yak too. Anthony, g'day.
G'day, boys. I just wanted to chat. There's a couple of issues there that you've brought up tonight. First of all, rest in peace, Andrew Symons, one of my favourite cricketers growing up. A sad loss to the cricketing world. In regards to the... I'll touch on the ruckman for the West Coast Eagles. I remember a couple of years ago, Carl, you mentioned that... It might have been last year. It was definitely in the last couple. You mentioned that if the Eagles really want to get a ruckman, they will find a way to get a ruckman. And that was in talks to Nick Natanui retiring or leaving the club. And I still believe that will be the case. I think, you know, the obvious to English and I forgot his name.
Jackson.
So I believe they're the two that are most obvious. But, I mean, for me, I would prefer to hold those draft picks and see if there are some younger players that you can grow. Obviously, Stranatica and there's Jamison. I think Bailey Williams has maybe had a little bit of a chance, and it's not really showing that he's gonna prove. I mean, ruckmen don't flourish until they're later in their career, so to speak. But then you look at English and Jackson, you go, geez, they're two of the best ruckmen in the league. So I just want to get your opinion on that. And secondly, just to do with the age group, there's a lot of talks about age group of players. to my understanding, when Brisbane Lions picked up Charlie Cameron and Lachie Neale, they exuberated a lot of media in a positive light, of the media talking about how good their chances were of a flag because they had the great age group of the young players, of the medium, that middle group, and also the more experienced, 30-year-olds plus. I don't think they've won a premiership in the last few years. So, I mean, to me, you don't have to have 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds, and 30-year-olds. If you have a team of 26-year-olds and a couple of low 20s and high 30s, what does it matter? I mean, if their skill and their ability is the highest in the league and they're great at their positions, it shouldn't matter what age you are. It's the potential that and the talent that you have on the team, led by, of course, some terrific coaches. Just your thoughts on that, if I can, boys.
Yeah, no, really good point, Anthony. I think if we get too caught up in the age demographic of whether it's the West Coast Eagles, you can look at Geelong and the age bracket that they have had for, I guess, some time now and regarded as Dad's Army in many respects. But they've been thereabouts, played in a prelim final last year, but has their window closed? Probably, even though they're still in the eight and playing some decent footy. Yeah, the West Coast Eagles, though, when it comes to their rucking situation, it'd be great to have a Luke Jackson or a Tim English come to the club just under the right circumstances. And, yeah, it'd be folly to go to the draft this year without a really strong hand if you're the West Coast Eagles. They just haven't had a good look in recent times. They will this year, given where they're going to finish on the table. And, in fact, the most important person at the footy club is going to be the list manager. Now, Craig Vozzo was holding that role in terms of bringing lists together. He's taken a bit of a sideways step in that department after a tough summer. Gavin Bell, I think, Carl, is the guy that is doing a bit of that now. And Trevor Nisbet, given his history in the footy department, also will play a role, you'd think, at the back end of the year. But that is where they have to get it right. I'd be very reluctant to give up early draft picks. But, yeah, to his latter point, Carl, Anthony makes about the age demographic. You can make numbers count whichever way you want. In Melbourne's case, you talk about the 30-year-olds down the spine. Brisbane's case, they've recruited Lachie Neale. They are the number two contender at the moment, you'd think, and they've done it pretty wisely. And at this stage, they're on track. But it doesn't have to be a formula which guarantees you've got a certain number of 22 to 25-year-olds or a certain number of 30-year-olds. You just have to have the right mix and the right amount of talent.
Yeah, I think, though, that when you look at, say, a team like Hawthorn that did well in the middle part of the 2000s and they won those premierships, it was interesting that Hale and McAvoy... I'm talking ruck stock.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant recruiting.
Well, they did recruit him as ruckman. Mm. And they've done that a lot under Alistair Clarkson at Carlton because, as our caller just said, Anthony... Ruckman take a long time to mature. So they picked him off when they were mature and played him as mature ruckman in premiership sides. So, that's a strategy. I mean, I'm sure that, for example, Lloyd Meek wants more opportunity. I mean, it's the only reason why Scott Lysett's not still at the footy club because he was playing second string to Nick Natanui and he didn't want to play second string. He wanted to be frontman. Tom Hickey was exactly the same. And then Tom Hickey, up until he got injured earlier this season, was playing beautifully at Sydney. And so that's the situation if you're a club who has a philosophy around playing one ruckman. Now, we've seen a few clubs go back to two this year, probably more than most, I reckon. If you have a look at quite a few of the clubs, including Richmond, I mean, they've got Soldo and Nankervis that they're operating with in tandem, and there's a number of other clubs that are doing the same sort of thing, like St Kilda have got Marshall and Ryder running around together in that side at the moment. So there is some opportunity with teams that operate two ruckmen and share the load. And then there's others that go predominantly with a Darcy and pinch hit with a lob because they don't want to, say, play Lloyd Meek off the bench, or they don't feel that Meek can go forward and offer the same that Wataruri Lobb does. So Lloyd Meek, for example, in the few games I've seen him play, is going to be of interest to other clubs when he comes out of contract. I mean, that's just the way that it is. Let's go to the Mouse after the break, actually, Mouse, because we're badly behind in time. He knows what commercial radio is like, I'm sure. Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company, the taste of Valley Spring Lamb. 133-882, we got that Whopper voucher to give away tonight. Thanks to the wonderful team at Hungry Jack's. Back soon.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. As we go back to the phones and the Mouse joins in on the hot topics tonight, thanks to the Dardanelle Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. Evening, mate.
Oh, the great Mark Reddings and Carl Linden. How are you?
We're good.
We're good.
Good on you, mate. Now, just before I talk about Andrew Symonds, let me tell you, I was up the Pilbara last week everywhere, all over there with Dustin Fletcher, as you know, and a girl called Hayley Miller, who, big congratulations, she won the Fremantle Dockers AFLW. She is the captain. She won the best and fairest for the first time on Saturday night. She is an absolute delight and role model and fantastic for women's football. She is, the kids up there everywhere were looking up to her. She is magnificent. And the Fremantle Dockers have got a diamond of a girl in their hands there. Now, just speaking of Fremantle, I would think that whispers are Matt Taven a prop player this week. And for the Eagles, Dom Sheed will be back, whether he plays Waffle or AFL. Depends how many players they've got left, but he will be back. So they're starting to get some people back. Now, Andrew Symonds, everyone's talking about what a great cricketer and everything is, but there's another side to him, a bit of a lighter side. Share a quick story if I can. Around the early 2000s, I think it was, I had Rex Hunt over here for doing some shows. And Queensland just happened to be playing Sheffield Shield over here in West Australia. And Andy Bickle rang me up because I did a few shows with him and Brett Lee together. And he said, Mouse, have you got Rex Hunt here? I said, yes, I have. They said, any chance me and Matty Hayden and Simbo can have lunch with him? He's our idol. We're all Fisher Pearsons and he's our idol. I said, yep, we'll organise that. So I organised it. So they came into the restaurant and then Rex sort of took off. And then after about an hour and a half, and Andy Bickle said, Mouse, can you do us a favour and drop us to Scar? We're going to go to the hotel there in the team bus dropped us off and we just got to get back. And I said, yeah, I'll take you back. Then on the way back, Andrew Symonds is in the back with Matty Hayden and Andy Bickle's in the front seat next to me. He said, Mouse, I'm going to have a bit of fun here. I said, why? He said, Simo just doesn't get pronunciations right. I said, okay, no worries. So we're driving along and he says, Simo, what's that sign say? He says, in a league. You're not going to get me, you blokes. You're not going to get me. What's that sign say? Karen up. You've got that right. And as they're pulling along towards Scarborough, you see the big sign on top of the hotel. Timo, what does that say? He says, Rendez Boss. And of course, it's Rendezvous. So all the boys are having a bit of a laugh there. Then we go into the room, and they got the, you know, the pay TV that will set up with all the channels. And I went to the toilet and Timo yells out, Mouse, you people in Perth, you're sick. There's something wrong with you people. I said, what's the matter, mate? And Bickle goes, what's going on, Timo? He goes, there's our room together. He said, look at this. Option one, normal channel. Option two, pay TV. Number three, Foxtel. Option four, adult movies. But option five, you people are sick in WA. It says disabled adult movies. They thought they were disabled adult movies. But it was to disable the adult movies so the kids couldn't watch them. So that's another story, a side of Andrew Symonds. A very nice bloke. But sometimes the other boys just had a bit of a laugh. And Gilchrist, Lang and all those blokes, Adam Board, 100%. A team man and a role model, and be sorely missed. And guess what? The fourth larrikin that has left us within a year, Marsh, Warne and Dean Jones. So it's getting a bit thin on that side.
All right.
Thank you, Mouse.
Thank you.
Yeah. The late, great Andrew Symonds, we've spoken about him already. Just going back to Hayley Miller, who I think Mouse is on the money with his description of her, really good talent. And it leads me into an announcement, I think, within 2 or 3 days from now about the AFLW are going to confirm that August will be when the playing schedule is about to kickstart again. So it's a pretty quick turnaround, Carl, for the Fremantle Dockers and the West Coast Eagles. And obviously some real troubled times, particularly for Fremantle, the recruiting situation. Steph Kane gone, of course, going to Port Adelaide is Houghton, Jimmy Houghton. So there's a bit to be done for Fremantle to stay where they are. And, of course, you know, West Coast, they've just got to get some talent into their group, some forwards to kick some goals. So hopefully they've been able to find a way locally and get some quality in, because otherwise it's going to be a tough season again for West Coast Eagles.
Absolutely. Reflecting back to the Dockers on the weekend, Skeet, and I've just actually had a look through their profile, because, you know, we just sort of don't look at that when they're flying. I don't think you look at it at any football club, and that's why I was thinking, well, let's have a look at West Coast. Are West Coast really any younger than, say, what Melbourne were? Well, I've already dispelled that particular myth. And when you look at Freo on the weekend, they had Mundy, who's 36, Collier, who's 30, Lobb, who's 29. The rest of the group, the rest of the team, is 26 or under. So Aish, Pearce, Ryan and Akers are all 26. For the most part then, you've got Erasmus was 18, Tracy and Walker, who came on as the sub, are 19, Sarong, Young, Chapman's 20, Sarong and Young are 21, Brayshaw's 22, Darcy, Cox and Brody are 23, Logue and Banfield are 24, and Darcy Tucker's 25.
Yeah, no, some good numbers there. And so, you think next decade, you're thinking this, and if they can build on that, which is obviously the aim, that there's going to be some reasonable success. And look, again, in brief, they've finished, I guess, the back half of the ladder in the last few years, whereas the Eagles have been sort of nudging playing finals apart from last year. So they've had a better look at the draft. And you can have as many looks as you want, Carl, but if you don't get it right, nothing changes. In fact, you can go back down again. So they have got it right at the moment. They are doing well, and they deserve a pat on the back for it.
Yeah, it does take a little bit of time, though. So once you've sort of been to the top of the mountain, it can take you a little while to get back there. And sometimes it just needs a little bit of patience. But I think that there is certainly going to be some questions asked over the next few weeks around careers, and there needs to be when you're not playing the brand of footy that is to the level that is required. And that is certainly where there are, I think, a few reality hits to be had at the West Coast Eagles right now. An AFL update, thanks to Hungry Jacks. Play Uno at Hungry Jacks. 1 in 4 wins instantly. Some bad injuries on the weekend. Zach Williams, Jack Gunston, both doing their ankles, subbed out early in their games. And Jack Steele, unfortunately, looks like he's going to be sidelined for a while with his shoulder. So some key players out there. We'll be back with more after this. More of your calls, 133-882 is our number. Get in the queue after Muzza and Beckenham. He's going to be first up after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Back to the phones we go, and as promised, Muzz of Beckenham is first up. 133-882 is our number if you would like to join us tonight. G'day, Muzz.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Look, you know, greatest show on earth, I think. Probably one of the greatest radio shows on earth, I reckon, besides probably Saturday Mornings with Hardy. First of all, OIP, the great Roy. One word for him, explosive. He was great. So condolences to his family. On Ruckman, we've had some lucky goes in Ruckman over the years. We've had Paul Harding, of course, great ruckman. Dean Cox, great ruckman. Nick Nat, unfortunately, didn't get a premiership. Great ruckman. Why did that take so long to develop? I'd like your thoughts on that, boys. And I think we'd probably need to get a ruckman because Nick Nat won't be around much longer because Oscar Allen will fill the void in the forward line. We've got some young guys coming through which are going to fill the midfield, like Connor West and the like. So what do you think, boys?
Well, I guess it's a question. There's so many areas of the ground that West Coast need to look at. And obviously, ruck situation is critical, given Nick Nat's longevity is questionable. Whether he can play another year or two is up in the air. So that's an area they need to look at. They need to look at, if they're going looking at the forward half of the ground, I think they're probably going to be serviced okay by Oscar Allen, but he's no certainty to play again this year, for instance. They need to help their midfield get some quality in there and some youth and some pace. And defensively, of course, Tom Barris, long-term, McGovern, short to medium term, okay. But yeah, the ruck is the one, I think, where we're looking at Nick Natanui and thinking, who's the backup? Who's the guy to help him through this? Now, Luke Stranatica, Carl, has been recruited to the club. I don't think he is the long-term answer. If he was, then I'd believe he would have played some more footy by now. That's not to say that they made the wrong choice there, because given the circumstances, just to have that backup option there. Bailey Williams showed a bit on the weekend. And look, there was some signs, and albeit he was against Max Gawn, that he can do that job. But we haven't seen it enough. And I'm not 100% certain he's a ruckman per se. He plays forward a fair bit. But again, Carl, after a couple of years of watching Bailey Williams, I'm still not convinced that he's the player that will step in to either help out Nick Nat or be the player to assume the responsibilities once Nick goes. And I don't think that's the case. So they do have to find a ruckman. Now, whether it's a big name like English, whether it's a big name like Jackson, remains to be seen. Or whether they have to draft and build a ruckman from the ground up, so to speak, which, as you know, takes some time. So it's not an easy fix, but one that the Eagles have to get right moving forward.
Well, if you think about, say, Sean Darcy, he was pick 38 back in 2016. So it's now 2022. Now, Callum Jamieson, who played for West Coast in the ruck on the weekend, started the game against Maxi. He was only recruited to the club in 2019. So if you consider the length of time it's taken Darcy to get to the position that he's in now, playing some really good footy, he's still got, say, 3 years up his sleeve, hasn't he, on that front? And what when did Aaron Sandilands pull the pin from Freo?
Jesus, stretching my memory there. But what your point, I think, is
that time, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. You know? But also, he speaking of taking time to develop, and we know the size that he had on his side, but it did take Aaron some time to feel like he belonged on the footy field and then started to dominate. So absolutely. And look, Callum Jamieson, one thing he does do, Carl, he competes. And that's what I've liked about even that game against North Melbourne, against Collingwood, when he was under the pump at times. He has shown, even playing as a defender, has shown an ability to compete. So, yeah, I like him. I'm not sure where he's going to end up on the ground, but he's someone I think that is worth persisting with.
Yeah, so Sandy didn't retire. He started in 2002. He didn't retire until 2019. And he didn't start playing good footy until he was a much more mature man. Now, Darcy's probably ahead of him from, you know, having the impact that he's having on games already. But, you know, it's one of the things to develop, and I think that with Nat Nui still there, they've still got a chance to be able to develop a little bit within that. 133-882. Mike in Denmark, we might just hold Mark over till after the news, because I don't want to cut him short here, and because we got so far behind with time previously, I want to give him a fair crack at it. Just updating some of the other news in sport today. Of course, Minji Lee overnight. Skeet, we did mention this off the top, but we haven't really spoken about it, but a big win over there in New Jersey, her seventh LPGA Tour title.
Yeah, outstanding performance, three birdies in the back nine, so she continues her rich vein of form. And speaking of females just carving it up on the world stage, Sam Kerr, that brace for Chelsea, FA Cup final, 3-2 over Man City. What a superstar of the sport she is, and we're super proud of her as well.
Absolutely. 49,000 fans, which
good numbers.
Is a record. Yeah, record for women's FA Cup football. And just lastly, Janelle Fowler, did she shoot perfect on the weekend? Did I hear you telling me that earlier?
66 shots. 66, yeah. Not one blemish. What a that's unthinkable.
Yeah, and they won. That's a good point. Okay, we'll be back soon.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Now, we've got plenty of time for your calls straight out of the 7 o'clock news. So 133-882 if you'd like to get involved in that. Thanks to Century 21, selling or renting, century21.com.au. We will update what is happening at the French Tennis Open. The qualifying is underway, and there is a number of Australians that are going to be on court. That action has already started, so we'll have a chat to Brett Phillips after the news that is fast approaching here on 6PR. And we'll also have a yak to Lee Kitchen, who was the state captain for WA yesterday against South Australia. He won the Simpson medal. For those of you that maybe went along to the game, you might want to give us your thoughts. And as I said off the top of the program, when we got underway tonight, thanks to Polaris Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand, we had 32 Australians that were announced as being confirmed for the Birmingham Commonwealth Games. And included in that was Nina Kennedy, pole vaulter. And it'll be fantastic to touch base with her and just chat on how she is progressing and maybe reflecting on some of her career so far. So that coming your way after the news is coming up next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back, and don't be shy to pick up the phone and get involved. 133-882 is our number. Me, Carl Langdon, and Mark Reddings with you tonight. 0487-999-882 is our text number as well. I know a number of you might not want to pick up the phone because you don't want to have a yak to us, but we'd rather talk to you. But if you want to text through a message, you're more than welcome to do that. And as promised, we're going to kick off the hour with Mike down in Denmark. Skeet, g'day, Mike.
Gentlemen, I watched the game yesterday. Eagles v Melbourne, and I think I see the same old thing going backwards, kicking the ball around. Yeah, it used to work 2 years ago, maybe last year a bit. It's not working anymore, so it needs to change. He hasn't got the cattle, obviously, so just change things around. flicked the old game plan. I know he tried to change it. It's not going to change. Just kick it down the guts and into the forward line and create something. For God's sake, I just, and I hear the same old stuff. Oh, yeah, they're trying hard. Yeah, they're tackling. Tackling's not going to get you goals. And this isn't down in front of those big sticks. It's going to get you goals. And that's what this team has to do now. It's got to show something different. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. And look, I can understand your frustration. And if you were at the ground yesterday, you would see at times where the Eagles would have the ball in a position to go either to centre-half forward or inside 50. And half the time there'd be a couple of Demons players sitting off the contest, and there'd be Stephen May by himself, or there'd be Jake Lever. There'd be that spare behind the ball. So that was difficult. Look, I think his overall premise is right, though. You look at the number of inside 50s just in the last fortnight. It's been all year, really, for the Eagles. But against Melbourne yesterday, 59 inside 50s to the Demons, 35 to West Coast. Again, the Eagles in that 30 to 40 bracket of inside 50s, really tough to win matches. Against the Brisbane Lions, 68 to Brisbane inside 50s, West Coast 33. And going back to that game against the Sydney Swans, and it was in under 30, I think 29 inside 50s for the whole match for the Eagles. They are just not getting enough supply in there, Carl. Now, whether that's the way they're not getting enough footy, full stop, obviously. They're not winning the football at the source. And that's a source of frustration for the likes of Matty Knights, whose job in part is to get his mids, who aren't, to be fair, when you're asking Greg Clark and some of these inexperienced players to go up against Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, it's very difficult. So the inside 50 thing is the one that I think really, in a lot of ways, is a complete shining light on where the Eagles have struggled to kick a score this year.
Yeah, I think that too, Ski, the other thing that we take into consideration, I mean, we talk about age, but a lot of those sort of early to mid-20 players at West Coast haven't been exposed in the same way that, say, Fremantle's youngsters have been, who basically essentially have been picked and thrust straight into the side. There's very few in West Coast's team that have taken an opportunity, if been given an opportunity, since that 2018 grand final victory. Because when you consider, there's really only Tim Kelly, Harry Edwards, Isaiah Winder got a game on the weekend, Alex Witherden, Greg Clark and Sam Petrescu-Seaton that played in the team on the weekend. Oh, sorry, and Callum Jamieson, who played in the team on the weekend since that grand final victory of 2018. And let's face it, Jamieson is only really back in the side because of circumstance, I would suggest. I mean, I don't think I'm out of tune there. I think Isaiah Winder would also have not been in the team if there was a couple of other players that weren't crook at the moment. So, you know, that's essentially as good as it's been in the last 3 or 4 years, where Melbourne, when you look at them and when you look at Freo, you know, they've picked up these young blokes and they're now playing in the senior side week in, week out, and they're probably some of their better players.
Yeah, true. Look, Connor West is one guy I think that can hold his head up pretty high. Look, he's not going to be the silk of the side. He got 29 touches yesterday and he butchers the ball from time to time, but he's cracking in and getting the footy, and that's a starting point for him. Look, I don't want to single out players, but Jake Waterman, for someone who's got, and we thought would be a little bit more advanced than what he is at the moment, he kicked a goal yesterday, 9 touches. He worked hard, but I just wonder what the future for Jake is at the footy club and what he expects and what the club expects of him, because he's one player that's been in the system for a while, has played those 50, 60 matches, and I just wonder exactly if they can look through the list, players like him who've got ability, no question, where he fits into the scheme of things.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the blokes are under the gun are sort of guys like Jackson Nelson, who hasn't been a regular in the side, or say a Josh Rotham, who's now going on to 24, going on 25. I mean, these are the blokes that are going to be under pressure, I think, because they haven't necessarily been able to establish themselves. And when they've gotten a game, in say, Jacko Nelson's case, he's played 95 games, but, you know, he should be up around the same age as Angus Brayshaw and Christian Petrarca and James Harms, for example. They're all the same age. They played 127 games, and Jacko's unfortunately only played the 95. So he's a fair bit behind that group who are pretty good.
Yeah, and you could also add Xavier O'Neill into that mix of players that you think, oh, are they going to make it? Luke Foley, who was injured yesterday with a concussion. So, yeah, there's a lot to ask of the West Coast Eagles with their list moving forward.
Yep, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more. We need a clearer commitment, and we'll be joined by Lee Kitchen next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and time now for our WAFL review for the all-electric Kia EV6, the wheels car of the year. And, of course, it was a buy other than the East Fremantle West Coast game. I don't think we really want to be talking about that one. But what we do want to be talking about is WA versus South Australia and what was a sensational game for those that got along early to Optus Stadium yesterday, like I did, to watch the match between WA and South Australia. Wouldn't have been disappointed. It was a really tight contest. It went right down to the wire. And the Simpson medalist was awarded to our state captain, to Lee Kitchen. And I'm happy to say he joins us here on Sports Day. Lee, welcome, mate. And congratulations on your effort yesterday, mate. And, gee, I felt for you. We're going down in the narrowest of margins yesterday.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, it was a great game. Hearing what you said there was brilliant to be a part of. It was just that disappointing that we weren't able to capitalise on our opportunities and having a little bit of a different conversation if we were. We're able to kick a little bit straighter and finish off a few more goals yesterday.
Yeah, the efficiency in front of goals really hurt you. South Australia kicked away a bit in the middle part of the contest, but the longer the game went, the more control you seemed to have. So, look, it was one of those matches. Pretty good game. In fact, two pretty even sides from where we sat.
Yeah, I think we started really well. I thought that first 15 minutes we controlled pretty much the game in our half, and we probably had four scoring shots in that period of time. And then definitely through the back end of the first quarter and the second, they really made the most of all their chances. I think at one stage we might have been 2-9, and they'd kick something like 7-1 or something like that when they got to four goals in front. So, yeah, that was costly, and hats off to them for making the most of their chances. But then as the game progressed late, I thought we really started to come into our own again, and who knows if it went just a little bit longer.
Yeah, 30 possessions for you must have been really, as Carl said, proud of your performance. But now, back-to-back times as skipper, and unfortunately WA has lost on both occasions. This time, the performance was far more meritorious given what the result was last year in Adelaide.
Yeah, we performed a lot better this year, and geez, it'd be much nicer to say that you haven't lost two games when you've been leading the side. I would have loved to have been able to get over the line and actually have a win under my belt. But yeah, it was a great game to be a part of. It was nice to play a reasonably good game and feel like it contributed to the team's almost success. Just needed to be a little bit better.
What did you make of the build-up, Kitch, given that, you know, you had a limited amount of time, and of course, you know, a lot of the boys come from all different clubs around the league to make it up. How did you feel that part of it was handled?
I think it was handled really well, actually. Considering we only played four games of waffle footy, we still had a four-week build-up, so obviously they had their eye on some players from the back end of last year and through the practice matches that they'd followed the form and then added to that squad throughout the first 4 weeks. But I thought Shep and the coaches did a great job of that. Just every Monday night, catching up through those first three rounds and then week of the game, training three times. And, geez, they were pretty decent hit-outs. I think the squad wasn't announced till Thursday. So Monday night training, 2 days off a game, blokes were playing 17 on 17, and it wasn't your typical Monday night, that's for sure. So the squad came together pretty well, really well, actually, I think. And the attitude of all the players to a man on the weekend was WA first, and it was a joy to be a part of from that perspective.
Speaking to Lee Kitchen, the Simpson medalist, WA captain from the weekend. Lee, we touched on the 25 minutes flat quarters with, of course, the rolling clock. How did you find it, the shorter game?
It was a little bit tactical, like probably a little bit more tactical at the end of each quarter. I think people were very aware of the time. And I think it was a fast game. I think coming off the ground, everyone thought it was pretty fast. People fatigued late, but I still felt there was a fair bit of speed in the footy. So I think it probably goes, something about 20% shorter with the flat 25-minute quarters. So, you know, I feel a bit better for it today than we would have otherwise, I think, with the extra time. But, yeah, it's fun to be a part of, and I didn't mind it. I mean, more footy is always better, but, yeah, it was a good game.
I guess the question, and maybe the criticism of playing that state match as it was and had to finish an hour before the Eagles played Melbourne, so the crowds were down there was, I guess, the atmosphere was lacking. Would you prefer next season, should state footy go on, and obviously that goes back to South Australia, but next time a match is played here, presumably, that you go back to, say, a Leaderville Oval or Fremantle Oval, more club land?
I actually really enjoy playing in the big stadiums. I think lots of the players like that opportunity to get to play on the best decks in Australia as well. So it's great from that perspective. Figuring out a way to get some more people to the game would be brilliant. Because obviously in a big stadium like that, I'm not sure how many there were yesterday. You guys might be able to let me know. But it was still exciting for the players out there. I don't really notice the crowd so much, I guess, guys, when you're playing. But yeah, playing on the big decks or the best decks across Australia is brilliant. But yeah, if you would be able to generate like a grand final like atmosphere somewhere else, then that could be pretty exciting for players as well.
Yeah, well, there wasn't enough people there yesterday. And, you know, you guys, both WA and South Australia, did it justice. So I thought that the standard was fantastic. The gamesmanship, I mean, you know, Skeet just asked you the question about the rolling quarters. I thought the gamesmanship, when it comes to you describing around the tactics towards the end of a quarter, particularly towards the end of the game, when the same South Australian player decided that he wanted to lay on the footy and pretend that he was hurt, that went a little bit too far for me, Kitch. And I reckon the umpires have got to be aware of that going forward if that's what's going to be in vogue. I've got no problems with rolling 25 minutes, but I think umpires need to be aware of that sort of tactical move, don't they?
I think he bounced up pretty quick after they told him to get up the third or fourth times, and I don't think it was through injury. So we were probably pretty stiff not to get a free kick, I think, in that situation. But umpire appreciation is all in vogue at the moment, guys, so I can't... Can't knock them for that. They did a pretty good job of officiating the game.
Yeah, well, I know that you did the presentation for the game afterwards, and we've said all of the right things.
It wasn't to the one who didn't pay the free kick, though.
Now, if I can just quickly, given that we are in a review, just a quick preview going forward. Of course, now you're going to go back into pulling your Subiaco Football Club colours on, and you had a very close victory against East Perth. It's been an amazing start to the Waffle season. Pretty much every club right down to yourselves, with the exception of West Coast, are all in the hunt right now. Three wins at the top, East Fremantle, Subiaco down in ninth at the moment, which is rare territory for you at this time of the year over the recent seasons. It looks like if we can go on the first month of footy, mate, it's going to be a pretty tough season.
Yeah, I think that's you're absolutely right. There's no easy games. Not that you sit back and say there's been easy games in the past, but you look across the fixture and you probably think, oh, we're a really strong chance that week. Or, you know, if you're a betting man, you think you're a really good chance that week. But at the moment, it's hard to... There's no easy wins. It's it looks tough every week. You've got a fixture with somebody that is sitting at the moment, for us anyway, pretty much everybody outside of one club sitting above us on the ladder. So it's exciting for the Waffle. I think the Waffle or the Footy Commission be rapt to see a bit of a shake-up in terms of where teams are sitting on the ladder at the moment. And like you said, I think everyone's still in the hunt. Maybe with one team obviously having its own challenges at the moment.
Yeah, great to speak with Lee Kitchen, of course. Subiaco star and part of Dimantina's Coffee out there in Osborne Park. Looked after me the other day. Thank you, Kitch, for that. Quickly, this weekend, always to look after you, my friend. What about jumping on the plane on Saturday to go to Kalgoorlie for a match against Swan Districts? Bit of excitement there. I'm sure the town will really embrace it.
It's been a good fortnight in footy at Subiaco at the moment, so that's really exciting to get back out to one of our districts and play. A lot of the guys obviously come from Kalgoorlie, so to go and play a home game in front of family and friends, they're wrapped about and excited for. And Swans are playing really well at the moment, so you'd expect it to be a great clash out there if we can bring our best footy and hopefully spend a bit of time in the community after the game and maybe the following day as well.
Good on you, mate. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Congratulations and bad luck for yesterday in that you didn't get the chocolates, but it was a really good game, a great display of what is a really good standard of footy in the West Australian Footy League, mate. And take care, and thanks for having a chat to us tonight.
Thanks, gents. Appreciate the support. Cheers.
Good on you, Lee Kitchen there, and he certainly played his part, Skeet, and I know there's a lot of people that were there. Wasn't enough people, in my view, not enough, but at least there was a few that went along to enjoy the footy early yesterday.
Yeah, in hindsight, it is an easy thing to have, but I would have thought going forward, perhaps state matches, not under those circumstances at Optus. I think maybe a club ground would be more suitable. What it does mean, the Hayden Button Cup was 48 wins apiece before yesterday, of course, now 49 to South Australia, but shows you just how even these two states have been over such a long period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Introducing the Kia EV6, unanimously judged the wheels car of the year. It's leading the charge. We'll clear a commitment, come back and have a yak to Nina Kennedy, one of those athletes that has been named for the Commonwealth Games, which are getting closer. We'll have a chat to Nina Kennedy next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6. Wheels Car of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. The ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day. And from navigating open roads to wrangling uncharted tracks for 100 years, Repco's been driven by passion. They drive this program, and this lady has been aspiring to achieve the very, very best in her sport for a while now. And thankfully, she has already earned her spot in our team for the Commonwealth Games, which are getting closer and closer. We're talking about pole vaulter Nina Kennedy, and she joins us here on Sports Day. Nina, welcome. How are you going?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me. I'm going well.
Is it nice to actually see that team announced, which has obviously only just been put out? I know that you probably already knew that this was going to happen, but it's good to see when it finally is revealed, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you're right. It is. I've known since Nationals, which was in March. So to have it in confirmation, in writing, it's always a nice little tick of my goal. So, yeah.
Nina, it's a question you ask of every athlete, be they footballers or whatever sport they play. How are you jumping in your case?
I'm jumping well. Thank you for asking. I'm jumping well. I haven't competed for a while now, just like due to a few niggles and, you know, whatnot. But I'm excited to get out into the competition field and compete against some girls and, yeah, show them what I can do.
Seems, well, 2018... Commonwealth Games bronze medal on the Gold Coast. Does it seem an eternity ago or like yesterday?
Oh my gosh, it feels so long ago. I felt like such a baby back then, and I feel like I have, you know, what, 4 years of like really solid experience, you know, all the ups, all the downs. So I think I'm coming in with, yes, a more mature approach. So yeah, I'm very excited.
Well, you were only a baby. You're only 21. And, Scott, I don't know if you can remember 21, but I remember the party I had. It was pretty damn good. Now, though, so to go from 460 to what you've already done when it comes to the Australian record, 4.82 metres at the Sydney Track Classic. As of the end of March, I believe that you were at that point ranked 20th in the world. Where does that sort of level sit right now for you?
Yeah, so what, 460 back at the Comm Games, you know, that came third. You know, that would just make the Olympic final now. And I think it just shows the depth of, you know, talent the world really has in, like, female, like, jumpers. Like, it's just getting so much better. You know, like, I can jump 460 in training now, you know, any day of the week. And I think that just shows how much I've improved, but also, you know, how much female pole vaulting has improved. So what won the Comm Games last year, I mean, last time, I think was 475. So, you know, that would put you in, you know, top eight, top six in the world. So, yeah, it should be a good competition.
We know the Comm Games is a huge goal this year, but it'd be remiss if we didn't mention you've also been selected for the World Championships in July. So that's a big enough event to be excited in itself.
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, definitely in the athletics world, World Champs and Olympics are the two, you know, biggest comps. And then Comm Games, yeah, falls shortly under that. So, yeah, they're both great competitions, and I can't wait to compete at them.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're heading off to Europe pretty soon. The program, is it hectic, or is it all strategically done with Paul Burgess, your coach, and the way set up that you've got? Is it mapped out almost week to week?
Yeah, it is. I think it's pretty hectic. I was actually looking at some of the countries and some of the places that I had competitions in, and I had never heard of them. So I think it's going to be a lot of travelling with poles, a lot of different competitions in different places, and yeah, then we'll head to the World Champs in America in the middle of when's that? July, and then yeah, head straight to the Com Games for the start of August. So yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a long time on the road, but I'm excited for it. Yeah,
absolutely. Compared to what you've gone through during the pandemic, this is all a blessing and it's exciting. Going back to Tokyo, the Olympics, tough experience for you. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, no, that is a totally accurate description. It was really tough, yeah.
And can you explain for the listeners just the process of going there and what occurred?
Yeah, of course. I think just, you know, doing anything in the pandemic was hard, let alone trying to get the Olympic Games to, you know, kind of go ahead. So, you know, for the months leading up, it was lots of, you know, lockdowns, not being able to train, going to Queensland, getting stuck, not getting let back into WA. So, you know, for the months leading up, it was just kind of like a COVID and logistical nightmare. And then I guess I just had a lot of little injuries and niggles that came, you know, with being an elite sports person. So I think I tore my quad 2 weeks out from the Olympics. So, you know, even going there and like putting on a brave face and, you know, trying to soak up the experience with that quad strain and then also with the COVID kind of experience was really difficult. I got kicked out of the village as well for,
really?
You know, being a close, yeah, I did, for being a close COVID contact. So I was in an isolation hotel for majority of the Olympics. So it was just, you know, it was a tough experience all around, but, you know, I wouldn't change it. Like, I think it's just made me a stronger person and, you know, it's really put elite sport into perspective for me.
We thought we had a big story there when you said kicked out of the athlete's village, and Carl and I are thinking, what's she done? This is controversial. She's taken a bottle of drink and jumped out of a cake or something silly.
Hey, Nina, we did have a chat too. I'm assuming now, do you train with Curtis Marshall at all?
Yes, I do. He's my training partner.
Yeah, so we had a chat to Curtis the other day. In fact, it was last week,
yeah.
And we were talking about the grip that was used on the poles. And he was talking about this weird concoction that it sounded like it'd take a week to get off his hands. Do you happen to do the same thing?
I do exactly the same thing, and anyone who knows me, you know, pretty well, they'll know that. You know, I'll rock up to events after training or competition with just this like hand covered in black sticky stuff just because I physically can't get it off, and it's so embarrassing, but yeah, it's pretty gross.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds okay for a bloke, but that's why I thought I had to get a woman's perspective on it, because we know how much the girls like their hands, right?
Yes, I know. I hate my hands, but you know, it comes with the job, I guess.
It does, Nina. Well, thank you very much for sharing a few minutes with us. And we do wish you the best of luck. And, of course, we'll keep a close eye on you. And we might even have a little bit of a chat to you closer to the time. Thanks for your time tonight.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much.
Good on you. Nina Kennedy, WA girl. She's a country girl too, who made the trek from down her hometown of Busselton, where she was born. Family moved to Perth so that she could complete primary school as an 11-year-old when she first joined junior athletic skeet. So she's dedicated her life to this, and now 25 years of age, probably in her prime, given what she's been jumping recently.
Absolutely. You mentioned the age of 21 at the Com Games on the Gold Coast. Well, if she's not in her prime now, she's certainly moving into that period of her life when she's going to be jumping at her very best. And great to see her training partner is Curtis Marshall, who we've only spoken to a few times, but gee, sounds like an engaging fella, a very good jumper, and they work well together by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. As we clear a commitment from navigating open roads to wrangling uncharted tracks for 100 years, Repco has been driven by passion. And on the other side, we'll be joined by Brett Phillips, who will update us with all of the action that is unfolding starting tonight in the French Tennis Open with qualifying.
Sports Day for Kia, the all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Toolkit Depot, the ultimate range of top brand tools, equipment and workwear. Toolkitdepot.com.au.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and it's fantastic to have Brett Phillips on the radio. He is the tennis expert, and the French Tennis Open qualifying is underway, and we've had a couple of Aussies out on court already. We'll have a yak about them as well as the chances of the others who are going to feature in qualifying later tonight, Rodionova, Fleuris, Hon and Gadecki, along with Mendes. But Brett, welcome to Sports Day. Nice to chat, mate. And how are you thinking we are going to go in this upcoming French Tennis Open? I think we've got three girls at the moment qualified on the women's side of the draw. We've got a fair few more blokes.
G'day, Carl. Mark, I mean, look, I suppose history says, apart from Ash winning, what, back in 2019, the French has never been overly kind to the Aussies. Play, in general, has never been overly kind to the Aussies. So it is the surface where you've got to grind and you've got to play some big points. I think, in fact, Diego Schwartzman in the Italian Open last week, there was a 47-shot rally in one of his matches. So you've got to be prepared to dig in on the clay. And as we know, it's been well documented. We haven't always had the facilities here in Australia. But, yeah, look, there's a lot going around. You mentioned some of the names, string of Aussies tonight. I'm keen to have a look at Olivia Gadecki because she is one potential shining light on the women's side. And obviously right now, I mean, let's just be straight up. It's, you know, we haven't, beyond Ash retiring, we haven't got a lot there. You know, when I say that, I mean a lot that I think are going to progress. They're sort of stuck in that, you know, 100 to 200 zone. But Olivia is the one who's got a bit of X factor. And, you know, David Taylor spent a fair bit of time with her. Sam Stoes, his former coach, when she won the US Open. And really, I think, put together a good game that can play on all surfaces. So I'd be keen to see if she can make the most of this qualifying opportunity. And, yeah, you're up against some pretty hungry opponents who, for a lot of them, you know, the Spaniards, the Italians, the South Americans, this is, you know, their bread and butter playing on clay, which they handle, you know, better than the other surfaces.
Yep, Brett, I think it's fair to say Australian tennis still in mourning in that perspective with regards to Ash Barty and her exploits. But from the men's side of the draw, can you make a case for any Australian to go into at least the second week?
Well, I think, you know, our watch right now, Mark, is Alex de Minaur. So his clay court season has been, you know, pretty good. This is the best he's performed. I mean, he, you know, went to a semi-final in Barcelona, that great match against the best, you know, hottest young player on the tour right now, Carlos Alcaraz, the Spaniard. And that went 3.5 hours. I watched his match against Zverev. That was Thursday night last week. You know, pushed him to a tiebreaker in the second. But, you know, that's still the challenge for Alex, is to beat these players above him. You know, he's, 0-4 against Jannik Sinner, the star young Italian. They're about the same age, come through as contemporaries. So I think his game has certainly improved. And certainly not to say that, you know, Alex is, you know, not good enough. I mean, right now he's, you know, the world number 21. So, and he's still only 23 years of age. So he might get this window a little bit down the track. He's still trying to build the body to serve. You know, still needs a bit of work, but he's a nightmare. He's the guy, if you're seeing the draw, you don't want to be playing Alex de Minaur because he makes you work overtime to earn a point. He is getting the ball quicker through the court. He's always taken the ball pretty early on the rise. So I'd love to see him take one of these bigger scalps. And for Alex, you know, come next week at Roland Garros, it's all going to depend on the draw. If he can, you know, get through two rounds, and maybe get, you know, winnable one in the third round. Who knows? He might be able to go on a bit of a roll. But he's the one that I suppose we're hanging our hats on at the moment.
You mentioned briefly Carlos Alcaraz, the Spanish teenage sensation, took down Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic at the Madrid Open. Is he just a clay court specialist, do you think, or is this young man going to be something quite extraordinary?
No, he's good on everything, Mark. He won Miami this year on the hard courts. He's grown up on the clay, but no, his game is suited everywhere. I mean, he made the quarters of the US Open last year. That was the real breakthrough at certainly Grand Slam level. It's been an incredible story. I just am absolutely gobsmacked the level of tennis that he is playing. The maturity beyond his years. I mean, he's got power. He plays the drop shot as good as anyone. He served volleys at times. A bit cheeky in the modern game. You know, he's just got this, you know, look at, just if you just look at him physically, I mean, he's built like, you know, a brick shelter shed, 10 years older. He's got this charisma about him. He loves the crowd and he embraces just being a professional tennis player. In Spain, they've got a history, obviously, of producing great tennis players. So in a lot of ways, it is Rafael Nadal take two for what he's achieving at his age. 5 titles by the age of 19. Rafa had 7. And, you know, he beat Rafa for the first time. He's beaten Djokovic. So So right now, I mean, probably if you're looking at the form line with Novak having won, you know, Rome last night and sort of just letting everyone know that he's back in town, it's sort of level pegging. I think Alcaraz and Djokovic, and I suppose just the uncertainty of Nadal just with his body at the moment, whether he's absolutely cherry ripe to win a 14th French Open.
So just on Novak, he beats Stefanos Tsitsipas. Swiatek won the women's side of the draw there in Rome. When it comes to the rules and regulations at this tournament, are there any? Has the COVID rulings gone away, or were there any for the French Open? And what does it mean for the Russians? Have they been allowed to compete at the French Tennis Open or not? Do you know, BP?
Yeah, they're all fine. It's only Wimbledon, Carl, who's standing their ground, not letting the Belarusians or the Russians play, although there's a lot going on behind the scenes with the ATP and the WTA, having met in Madrid and Rome the last 2 weeks, thrashing out what potentially they're going to do. I mean, there is talk they may just not have rankings points. So, yes, Wimbledon control their major, but the ATP and the WTA still control the rankings, and they can just say, look, we're not going to apply rankings to that tournament, and effectively it becomes an exhibition. That would be a drastic step. So all that is playing out behind the scenes. But as far as the French goes and everything else, it's only the grass court season, and that's the lead-ups to Wimbledon. So we're talking Eastbourne and Birmingham. There's a few other events. Queens, of course, the traditional lead-up where the Belarusians and the Russians won't be able to play unless there's a drastic shift. But I can't see Wimbledon backing down now.
Just quickly, Sam Stosur had retired, and now I see in Strasbourg she's unretired. Can you just tell us what's happened there, BP?
Well, yeah, I mean, she played in singles last night, got wiped pretty quickly. I mean, she has won that tournament, so I can only think that they've given her sort of a special wild card into that event to just have a hit, basically, because, yeah, certainly from what I understood, and Sam, you know, called the women's final with us, she was just going to play doubles this year, and then she was going to bow out at the end of the year. And this is her first week back since the Aussie Open, having spent some family time in Melbourne. So yeah, I didn't expect her to pop up in singles last night. I don't think it'll be a regular occurrence. I mean, her ranking has slipped, you know, significantly now, but I think because she'd won that event, they've probably given her a special entry, and she's thought, oh well, I might as well get a match under my belt just to blow some of the cobwebs out.
Might get a little bit of cash too. You know, that never goes astray. Exactly. Thank you very much for your time, mate. Really appreciate it. And we'll hopefully have a chat to you a little bit more in the next couple of weeks, if you don't mind.
Easy done. Always good to talk, gents. Thank you.
Good on you. Brett Phillips, who is the tennis expert. It's great to have him here on Sports Day. Thanks to Repco, from navigating open roads to wrangling uncharted tracks. For 100 years, Repco's been driven by passion, Ski.
Yeah, let me just quickly say, he's saying she needs a bit of extra money. Can I tell you her career prize money? $19,927,553. So we tend to forget that even though Sam hasn't been pushing for titles for a long time, she is still a very, very wealthy woman.
Yeah, you'd hope so. And, you know, there'd be some endorsements and other things outside of that career prize money that she's been able to collect too. So, as I said, at the end of the day, you keep on doing it for as long as you can, because you are a long time retired and she's still only a young woman. So good on her for getting out there and enjoying something that she absolutely loves. As we clear a commitment and come back, and we'll get into our Kia Top 7 and our news headlines next here on Sports Day. Now, let's get into our Kia Top 7 for the all-electric Kia EV6, yes, the wheels car of the year. Mark Redding's been working hard on this. Skate, what have you come up with?
Yeah, mixed this week. Normally we go straight AFL from 7 through to 1, but I've found just a couple of really nice moments involving some athletes that have really stood out from a female perspective. But at number 7, going back to the AFL, Lachie Neale, Brisbane Lions superstar, picked up 10 coaches' votes, by the way, 36 disposals and a goal against Adelaide on the weekend. Now, he's already won a Brownlow medal. Is there a second one to come for him? Oh, I'm not so sure. He's not at least in the top 5 or 6 vote getters at the moment. Number 6, Tuke Miller, one of my favourites at the Gold Coast, 34 touches against the Dockers. He's been just a terrific player for a couple of years now. Hasn't quite received the recognition perhaps that others have as a midfielder, but he's certainly the one player that opposition sides have to try and shut down. And if the Suns are to make the finals, Carl, he's going to be a player they need to. And speaking of which, do you think they can actually play finals after beating the Swans and the Dockers and now on a bit of a roll with their squad?
No, but I think that they are certainly showing us that they have at least a really competitive edge to them, a much more competitive edge than what they had a couple of weeks ago, which I think is something that was important for Stuart Dew more than anybody else, because he's been in that job. He's got a very poor winning percentage when it comes to the number of games since he's been at the helm of that football club that he's been able to win. In fact, Skeet, going into the start of this season there at the Gold Coast, he'd been coached there since 2018 and won 19 of 82 games at an average winning rate of 23%. So if we talk about the bloke who's already left, and that's Leon Cameron not getting hold of his job and keeping it, well, Stuart Dew, until the last couple of weeks, has probably been in the same boat. So he's now got his team playing better. Can they beat the Western Bulldogs this week? That would probably make a statement.
Absolutely. So Tuke Miller at number six, number five, we got to see him live yesterday, and Christian Petrarca only kicked 2 goals, 4, so his kicking boots weren't exactly on, but 28 disposals, just love the way he goes about it. Just a joy to watch, and certainly a lesson for those West Coast Eagles midfielders just to see about how he goes about his business. Number four, another Brownlow medalist, 32 disposals for Ollie Wines on the weekend, kicked 2 goals. So a lot of midfield presence there in their top four of the seven. Now, number three, we're going down the female path here, and what about this? 66 shots by Janelle Fowler for the West Coast Fever as they defeated the Sunshine Coast Lightning. Not a miss. 66 shots. So she is just a gun goal shooter for the Fever and deservedly one of the best players in Super Netball. And number two, we mentioned her exploits and she's done it again. Minji Lee winning the Founders Cup. 3 birdies in the back nine, giving her a 2-shot victory. And look, we're going through a beautiful little period here in women's golf. In fact, golf in WA full stop. So Minji Lee at number two. And number one, Carl, after scoring a brace for Chelsea in the FA Cup final at the weekend as they beat Man City 3-2, she was described as the complete centre forward by her manager, Emma Hayes, or referred to our very own Sam Kerr. Remember, she kicked a couple of dazzling goals to get Chelsea the title a couple of weeks ago. Well, now she's done it in the FA Cup. Just a superstar. She's at number one on our Kia Top 7, which, of course, is all thanks to the Kia EV6, unanimously judged Wheels Car of the Year. It's leading the charge, Carl.
Let's get in on this day, Skeet, for Baron Day, because the little things are everything.
Yes, on this day in 2000, Susie O'Neill, or Madame Butterfly, as she was affectionately known, became the greatest gold medal winner in Australian swimming history when she won the 200 metres freestyle, the 34th national title of her career. What a superstar of the sport she was. On this day for Barra and O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.